Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show monthly market update episode for this month of September 2017. I'm here again with our resident expert economist and wealth advisor, Paul Sloat, CEO and founder of Green Drake Advisors based in Wayne, Pennsylvania. If this is your first time joining us here on the REI Diamond Show, or if you are one of our returning loyal listeners, welcome to the show. Every week, I invite a real estate expert from somewhere in the United States to share their wisdom as it relates to real estate investing. If you're interested in checking out our full catalog of shows or interested in receiving an email when the weekly episode is released, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com. You'll even get a free download of my book on wholesaling called Become a Wholesale Real Estate Master. In addition to our weekly expert guest format, once per month, Paul Sloat joins us here on the show and fills us in on the economic forces at work in the national and global economy and what those forces might be expected to do to the local real estate investment markets in the short and long term. Once again, this month, single family real estate seems to remain strong. However, you might want to listen closely for the economic impacts coming down the pike as a result of the recent run of hurricanes. Let's get right to it. All right, welcome to the show, Paul.
Hey, welcome, Dan.
And how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's supposed to be a rainy day here in Philly, but it turned out to be partly sunny. So, you know,
nice.
That's much better.
I am standing here looking out over the lake, beautiful sunny day with a little bit of clouds out there. Construction's still going on, so if you hear that on the episode, I apologize in advance, but otherwise we should be good to go.
You know, we should be good to go. And just for your listeners' benefit, we're recording this on September 14th, 2017.
All right. I might as well give the floor to you, Paul.
All right. Well, has anybody noticed that the economy has started to grow a bit faster? Well, if you haven't, you should have, because that's exactly what's going on. And when we look at all the data, it confirms that the overall economy is accelerating. And why is that? That is because we've had a change in presidential administration, and many of the policies from the former administration that held back the growth rate of the economy have been reversed or in the process of being reversed. And we would put those into a number of categories, but they include putting in place permits for a number of infrastructure projects, removing the possibility of a significant tax increase, putting on notice countries like China that they cannot solve their internal growth issues by exporting to the U.S., and a few other things that have gone under the cloak in presidential decrees that have reversed many of the economic issues that were holding up investment in the economy. So that is something to keep in mind, because if we have truly sustainable faster growth, then we're likely to have truly sustainable higher interest rates and higher inflation. And in fact, we are seeing the beginnings and stirrings of the edges of cost push inflation. Now, a quick note on the government's inflation statistics. They are wrong, and they systematically understate the real inflation rate. And the reason for this is because every payment that the government makes to the average consumer is tied to the published CPI, or another of the inflation indices. So, for example, the government reported lodging away from home is having a negative increase year over year. In other words, the cost was down year over year. However, if we were to look at the statistics reported by Smith Travel Research, which is considered the industry data guru for the hotel industry, the average daily rate is up 1.7% year over year. So As you can see, there can be some pretty significant differences. We estimate that real inflation is at least 2% higher than what the government is reporting. And we would pay attention to a number of things that may even accelerate the government's inflation index. Number one, housing costs. So house prices have been rising at 6 to 7%, depending on whose index you look at. The Case-Shiller index has been running up in the high 5, 5.6, 5.8 year over year, while things like the government's FHFA index are running up at a rate of 6.6 and higher percentage year over year. So housing prices continue to move up. The only constraint will ultimately be incomes and the ability to purchase a home. Second, if we were to look at some of the material costs going into the building industry, we're having a little dispute with Canada on lumber. Lumber prices are up significantly year over year. And this dispute, by the way, has been going on since the early 90s, and the solution is we limit the amount of Canadian lumber into the U.S. If we look at other things like insulation, the price is going up. If we look at asphalt for roof tiles, it is going up. If we look at a number of other things like copper piping, it is going up. And the final piece we would look at is in the material costs, we would look at energy. Energy costs have been down because we've had a bunch of additional U.S. capacity coming online. However, over the last 6 months, U.S. inventories of oil have dropped almost 600 million barrels. In other words, we've been drawing down the inventories, and that is supportive of higher prices. And in fact, the International Energy Agency just raised global demand growth for oil this year to 1.6 million barrels a day. At the same time, we have OPEC constraining its production and U.S. production growth only able to satisfy a portion of that overall demand growth. So what it looks to us is that we are going to have higher oil prices over the near term, over the next year or so. The other reason we think oil prices are headed higher is that Saudi Arabia plans to bring Saudi Aramco, its national oil company, public. It certainly doesn't want to do that at $30 oil. It would much prefer if oil prices were in the mid-50s. So I suspect there is going to be support for oil, and the Saudis will do whatever is necessary so that oil prices meander their way upward. In fact, we've seen oil prices, based on the recent demand data, start to creep up from the 40s, WTI Texas, that is, and potentially headed into the 50s. And what everyone needs to remember is that energy goes into everything. So if I'm a trucker and it costs me more to run the truck, what does that mean? It means I have to charge my customer more. If I'm running a generator off that at the construction site, I've got more costs that need to ultimately be passed through to the customer. So one should keep an eye on energy because it goes into everything in the economy. Secondly, labor costs have started to creep up, especially for skilled labor. Labor costs for skilled labor are creeping up at 4 to 6%, according to a number of commentators. We would pay attention to this as it's going to cost more for those of you buying and fixing up houses to do so. So you better make sure you've got enough margin of safety for prices to creep upward. Lastly, we've had a couple of little storms called Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma. We note that the typical norm for hurricanes is there are a slight depressant in the quarter in which they occur, so we expect them to have an impact on Q3 growth and maybe on some Q4 growth. However, afterwards, reconstruction begins, and that adds to economic growth. We would note that housing permits have been creeping upward, and housing permits are already up on average 10% year over year for the first 7 months of the year. That means we'd be at almost an 825,000 or 850,000 rate for single family housing. If we were to add reconstruction of another 100 or 200,000 homes because of the damage from the hurricanes and maybe the work needed to be done to repair maybe another 50 or 100,000 homes, there could be serious pressure on costs and on labor costs, as is typical after a hurricane when we come to rebuilding. So we think that the cost side of the economy is beginning to creep up. The other thing we think is that the dollar has peaked from a long-term perspective. The dollar is down 6% or 7% on a trade-weighted basis this year, and it's beginning to be reflected in import prices. As this reflects in import prices, that will start acting as an accelerant to inflation from a drag on inflation for the last few years. As the dollar has gone straight up, import prices have been going down. However, that is likely to reverse. And the other thing to reverse as the dollar goes down is some of the demand that got siphoned off to offshore countries is going to come back on shore, which will increase demand for manufactured goods in the United States and put some pressure on capacity utilization in manufacturing. We would note that the ISM is at a pretty high level, running up around 60, and the new orders is pretty good too, running up in the high 50s, and that's about as good as it gets when we're outside of the initial bounce out of a recession. So when we look at the overall economy, growth is strong, growth is fundamentally underpinned, and growth is accelerating. And the other thing our listeners should keep in mind is that when the economy grows faster, inflation tends to be higher because growth and inflation tend to go hand in hand. Lastly, we would point out that just because inflation has been low for the last 5 years doesn't mean it will continue low. Inflation has a very sneaky way of all of a sudden exploding upward. In fact, we just wrote a major piece to be released tomorrow showing how what's going on today looks very much like what went on in the 30s before the 1940s inflation, or in the late 50s, early 60s before the inflation that began in 1965. So we see inflation ahead and rising for the U.S. economy, and it is something to keep in mind. Second, let's talk about housing. Permits continue to rise 10%, as we noted, and the level of housing starts is rising at a pretty good clip. We noticed that last year we started and had permits for about 1.2 million houses and other units, and while multifamily permits are basically, you would think, down this year, but total permits are up 6% despite them being down slightly this year. So it is likely that overall housing permits will end the year somewhere around 1.3 million units, which is getting close to our 1.5 million unit run rate. We would point out that house prices have had a pretty good run and are now exceeding in a number of areas their peaks from back in 2007. There is now a question of affordability because we need incomes to rise in a period where interest rates are going up. Otherwise, the ratios won't work. And we would point out this is going to be especially important as millennials are now 42% of all home buyers. We pointed this out last month, but we re-emphasize that what we're getting now is a big portion of the home buying public is millennials buying their first house. In about 5 to 7 years, they'll be ready to start buying their second house, but not yet. What we see going on in many local neighborhoods is young families with children moving into those houses that are becoming vacant. And what we've seen recently is some of these starter homes sitting there, as we suspect with the rise in mortgage rates, it's becoming more difficult for the millennials to make the income ratios they need to in order to be awarded a mortgage. Lastly, we would make a comment on the rental market. As you know, we have been less positive on the rental market. As we know, rents to incomes have been falling now, and that is something that we should pay attention to. As rents to income start to fall, it's going to limit the ability to increase rent. The initial issue with rents right now is that we brought on a whole bunch of incremental capacity over the last 12 months, and that's going to continue over the next 6 months, but should tamp down a little bit in 2018. However, as the housing statistics show, millennials are moving into their prime first home buying years, and we expect them to do that and move out of the rental apartments they have been occupying for the last 5 to 8 years. As a result, we expect rental rates to incomes to be under pressure for the next number of years. In other words, it's likely that rental rates will undergrow the overall housing price rise and also undergrow inflation rates. So this might impact same store net operating income. In other words, how much your net operating income can grow over time. So as an owner of rental properties, you have to start thinking about whether you can do interesting things with your buildings in order to ensure that you can make the types of returns you think you can make. So this is just something to watch and think about as we move forward here with the rental market. And we think that over time, the rental market's going to come under more pressure, especially after the next recession, which we expect probably in 2019, based on the Federal Reserve's plans on raising rates during 2018. We expect that if they raise rates the way they say and take money out of the economy the way they've stated, that this will ultimately lead, with a lag as it always does, to a slowdown in the economy, and in this case, likely a recession, as we've watched the various props of growth in the economy be pulled out one by one. And many of the other areas are interest rate sensitive that are left, and should the Fed squeeze and it cause a downturn in these areas, then you would have a recession. So we would pay attention over 2018. While we don't see a recession in the first half of 2018, it is time to watch the Federal Reserve carefully and watch your exposure overall to be prepared for what is coming. And that is all I have for today, Dan.
Cool, Paul. I really appreciate the information. I got a couple pages of notes here. Two questions. Number one, I have to call you out, Paul. We were on these calls maybe a year back, and the recession was supposed to be here by now, and we're pushing it back to 2019. What is it that's different about this? You know, even going back a little further, it wasn't you, but a lot of people out here are expecting the recession to come any minute. Do you have any kind of guess as to why we haven't seen that yet?
2018 or 2019, depending. And here's the depending. The depending is the following. The following is the Federal Reserve. What the Federal Reserve has done is said we were going to raise rates X. Instead, they raised rates X minus. Okay? If they had actually raised rates the way people expected them to do, then we would have had a recession. So it comes down to the Federal Reserve. If the Federal Reserve continues to hold off raising rates, you won't have a recession. You'll end up with an accelerating economy with accelerating inflation. So it's really all up to the Fed. I don't think it's up to what the federal government does or anybody in Congress. You can see how it's really up to the Federal Reserve here as to what they want to do. Typically, with a new leader at the Fed, which is what we would expect in January, you will probably get some more interest rate increases. Their mandate is dual. One is full employment, which is where we are. I would point out we have the lowest unemployment rate since almost a decade ago, and the other piece is inflation. So their dual mandate is price stability and full employment. You add full employment, so they're going to shift to inflation. If inflation picks up, as we see it already doing, then they will have no choice but to raise rates. So I think that that's the real question. What is the Fed going to do? If they continue to hold off raising interest rates, what you will get is an accelerating economy and accelerating inflation.
Gotcha. Yeah, I didn't mean to come at you or offend you in any way like that.
Oh, I'm not offended.
My apologies.
As pretty famous guy once said, you know, when the facts change, the analysis changes. So what happened
True
is
enough.
The facts changed. The Fed didn't do what it said it was going to do, so therefore the facts changed.
Makes sense. The other thing I wanted to talk about, which is a pertinent statistic for me watching many of the markets that I'm in the country right now, and that's the 1.5 million unit run rate versus the 1.3 million units. I believe that was permits that were issued. I may be mistaken in that number. My question really, Paul, is how many more years until we've reached kind of an equilibrium from the deficit we were in the 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12 years versus when we started to build more units? I mean, just a guess. I'm not looking for an exact calculation, but how many more years?
2 to 3 years, probably by 2020. And here's what we're looking at. We know for the public home builders, they have a lot of land inventory that's now going through the permitting process. And that's going to take a couple of years, right? As you know, you can't just get a big piece of land permitted overnight. My partner sits on the zoning board for a local township, and these things take time because the home builders say, well, this is what we're going to build, and they always ask for more than they want, and then the township comes back and says, well, we'll give you this, and then the home builders say, no, that's not enough, and, you know, they wrangle for a while, right, and then they agree on something, right, to get the whole thing permitted, right? And then once you're permitted, you got to make sure that all the environmental, all that other stuff is done. So it takes a bit of time before you can actually build on the land, right?
But makes sense.
What we're seeing going on is that there's a lot of land being teed up to go through the permitting process. Okay? Now, it will take time because, you know, you have to ramp this whole thing up, but we see it being ramped up. Okay, and our gut guess says that somewhere in 3 years away, that single family numbers will get back to where they've always been in terms of building, you know. Then you'll have a certain number of apartment units, and you'll be in that sort of 1.4 to 1.5 million range, which is kind of equilibrium. Now, that's not to say we won't overshoot it, because if you look at any housing cycle, you've had a period below and then a period above in terms of unit. And what you could happen is in the early 2020s, if the, you know, starting in, let's say, after the next recession, in, let's say, late 2019 and 2020, you could get a lot of millennials buying their first house, right? And you could then accelerate production above the 1.5 million and it still gets absorbed until rates go up. And then you'll have your classic housing cycle. But I think that's kind of where you are. It's a little hard to tell exactly. We've been kind of just creeping up, creeping up, creeping up. And so we're getting there. Does that make any sense, Dan?
It does. That's kind of what I suspected. I do have one last final question here, Paul, before I let you run. And that is, what impact, if any, will the strength of the dollar have on single family housing prices here in the United States? Will a falling dollar, you know, on the worldwide scene have any impact for us single family real estate investors here stateside?
Here's how it could have an impact. If the dollar continues to fall, imported goods prices are going to go up. It will provide more pricing flexibility to domestic manufacturers and feed through in the inflation statistics. The other place that it could feed through is if you have a weaker dollar, you'll have more production here, which will probably accelerate economic growth, which will tighten up probably the labor market more, right? So labor rates could accelerate even more. So I think it depends, but I think that's a more long-term impact. And then the other thing you have to keep your eye on is the trade negotiations. So, for example, NAFTA is being renegotiated. And basically, Canada and Mexico said, well, we don't want any changes. Of course, they don't want any changes because the current, you know, trade status is very beneficial to their economy. Okay? We run a massive trade deficit with Mexico. Before NAFTA was passed, the whole way it was passed is that we would be selling goods to the Mexicans. And if you remember, Ross Perot said, no, that's wrong. What's going to happen is all this manufacturing is going to get relocated to Mexico to hire dollar-a-day Mexicans, right? And that's exactly what happened. And so all this manufacturing has been pulled off, right? On top of which, right? Technically, if you go back to classical economics, if you're running a trade deficit with a country, your currency should depreciate relative to that country, and that country's currency should appreciate, right, until you reach equilibrium. Well, the exact opposite has happened with Mexico. The Mexican peso is below, way below where it was when NAFTA was enacted, and the first thing the Mexicans did was cut their currency significantly in value so they could sell more goods to the U.S. I suspect that that game's over. And if that game is over for Mexico, it's over for other countries too. So to the extent that we're not going to allow other countries to grow by depreciating their currencies and selling goods to us, it's going to create more demand internally for production of whatever, and it's going to be more inflationary. So ultimately, I think all these forces there look to me like we're going to have more inflation than less inflation in the future. Does that answer your question? So, I know that's a roundabout way to look at the dollar, but I think that that's really the way I would look at it.
Yeah, I think, and my guess is, Paul, on the dollar strength is probably going to increase the cost of construction again, which is exactly what you're talking about with the inflation issues that we're dealing with right now in the market and have been this year. I don't know that it would have an impact, at least from my perspective, if the dollar is weaker or stronger when I have Mr. and Mrs. Smith buying a house for me in, you know, Tampa, Florida, who are going to live in the property.
I don't think it's going to matter, except it might accelerate U.S. growth, which might mean that their disposable income is going to go up faster.
Got it. So they might pay more for it.
They might be able to pay more.
Tough one to forecast.
Yeah, it's really tough to forecast. But I don't think the dollar going up or down – historically, the dollar going down has been positive for U.S. economic growth, and the dollar going up has been a drag. And that can be statistically shown to be true.
Paul, for any of the listeners that do not know who you are, do you want to give a brief, you know, who you are once again for the wrap-up and some contact information for them to get in touch with you?
Sure. I am CEO of Green Drake Advisors, which is a full-service wealth management company. We do both advisory on the financial planning side of the ledger, as well as do the actual wealth management for our clients. Oftentimes, they have significant investments outside of the money that they have us manage for them, and they ask for our input into evaluating those investments. The best way to get us is to go to our website and fill out the contact us form, and somebody will get back to them within 24 hours, or they can call our offices at 610-687-7766, and someone will be back to them within a day.
All right, cool. Once again, thanks, Paul. Appreciate you taking time out of the day to share with our audience these jewels of wisdom.
Thank you, Dan, and I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to this monthly market update episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving an email notification the next REI Diamond Show episode as it's released? You can either sign up at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Do you have deals for sale? Go to www.reidiamonds.com and send them over. I am buying in Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Chicago, Atlanta, Tampa Bay, and Miami regions in Florida. You can also find deals that I have for sale along with our full catalog of REI Diamond Show episodes. Tons of cash generating and wealth building opportunity can be found there as well. Thanks again for being a loyal listener of the show. Dan Breslin here, signing off.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.